I've got one client specifically who's discussed this with us, who has ADHD and autism, and he said, as soon as I sat down in your seat, I was just comfortable.
Oh,
and,
wow.
he was like, and I just knew it clicked, this is my barber now. And everywhere I've gone from that point on, he's followed us.
Guys who used to get their haircut at Tony and Guy, or one of these chains that they'd pay 40 quid for a haircut or whatever, are now changing. And they've found their home in like Club 13 or My Place or all the others that are out there.
Yeah, because some people are there for the service.
Mm.
I got diagnosed in February this year.
Oh, wow.
And it's only been the last couple of years that I've even had it on my radar. I just thought it was a bit different.
But do you find that impacts more into the shop itself and the way you run your shop and your team? Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm here today with Ryan Lewis. Hi, Ryan. How are you, mate?
Yeah, really good. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.
Yeah, it's exciting, though.
Well, you're Club 13 now, which is really kind of the thing that spiked for me and got me wanting to get you here to chat. But what have you been up to before that? Talk us through your career up to Club 13.
It's been a bit of a funny one for me. I started cutting hair at 14.
Wow.
So my next door neighbour had a barber shop in Blythe. And just through that connection, I ended up sweeping floors for him on a Saturday. But I found that I got bored sweeping floors. So I remember I tripped him up one day when one of the other lads had phoned in sick. He was stressed. It was a really busy shop. So I've been like hovering around him, watching what he's doing, not realizing what I was doing at the same time. So I've tripped him up, and I remember him being like, you need to get out of my space. You need to just let us cut hair today, Ryan. So obviously as a 14-year-old kid, I took the hump. But later on in the day, he pulls his hair. Look, I didn't mean to snap at you. Come over here a second. And he was doing a haircut, and he says, well, what's the next step? And I knew, but wow. I didn't realize that I'd be learning. So he was called Dave. He's a brilliant guy. He's taught loads of people. So after that, he started getting us in on a Wednesday after school and teaching us. And from there, I stuck at it, but I was never really planning on being a barber. I was academically gifted at school. So I went to uni and I did psychology for a year. I tried to go somewhere in rugby, but that didn't happen. And then I remember he got in touch just before I went back to my second year at uni and asked if I would go back. And I thought, I miss the shop, I miss the environment, I miss making money.
Yeah.
I was the only skin student because all my mates at that point weren't students. They were like bricklayers and scaffolds. I went back in there. Realistically, it was never something I took seriously until I moved out of that area and went down towards the whole area. I was in Beverley for a while. That was about 6 years ago. And that's when I started taking barbering seriously because I realised this is what I love.
Mm.
I was kind of pushing it away because it wasn't part of the initial plan. And I think sometimes you just got to sometimes go, this isn't the plan, but it feels right.
What
I like. Yeah, it feels right. So never look back since.
No, nice one. So where did you train? Where did you get all your, was it just experience bubbling through?
Yeah. So I trained with him. It was Headcase Barbershop in Blythe, Northumberland. And it was just booming. Everybody came to us for haircuts. It was a backstreet barbershop.
Great to be in one of those environments. Yeah. I mean, that's the core, whatever your barbershop's like, you're wanting that vibe going on there.
But it was a pillar of the community, and it genuinely was. And I kind of feel like the industry lost that a little bit. And that's what I'm trying to bring back with Club 13. We're trying to bring back that sort of, it's not just the barbers that are part of that team, it's the clients as well.
Yeah.
And I think we're getting there. But yeah, I didn't learn at college or anything like that. I learned just from Davey and a couple of the other lads. And then I got externally assessed. And for me, that was the right way to go.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I mentioned to you before that I've got ADHD, and the college route of learning probably wouldn't have been right for me. Academically, I was gifted, but it was only in things that I really found interesting. And the academic sort of teaching of barbering, it doesn't really work for me.
Right.
I like to do things by eye and by feel, and I tend to plan my cuts. And I think that's perfect for people that want to learn that way and cut that way. I mean, you've got the likes of...
Did you always know that you had the ADHD, or has that been a quite new thing? When's that been named for you?
I got diagnosed in February this year.
Oh, wow.
And it's only been the last couple of years that I've even had it on my radar. I just thought it was a bit different. So like, I knew that was something different about it. I could never really fit in. I didn't socialise the same as other lads. But I managed well, do you know what I mean? And I think that's why I went unnoticed, because you mask it.
Yeah.
You sort of act normal and you kind of do the things that you're expected to do from society.
But you didn't really feel that connected in reality?
No, I've had a few close friends throughout the years and they've kind of came and gone.
Mm.
But when I look back now, I'm like, oh my God, they were all the same as me.
Okay.
Which is what happens. You tend to band with your own. In my shop alone, we've definitely got that.
Mm.
So,
I mean, it's definitely, you know, obviously it's more spoken about now, but do you find that impacts more into the shop itself and the way you run your shop and your team?
It certainly impacts. Yeah, it does. It does impact the shop and the team, but it impacts massively my client base.
Right.
So what I've realised is that I've sometimes gained clients because they were a little bit... I've got one client specifically who's discussed this with us, who has ADHD and autism. So he said he was really nervous about coming to a new barber. He's from Milton Keynes. And he got recommended me from a friend of his who became a friend of mine as well. And he said, as soon as I sat down in your seat, I was just comfortable.
Oh,
and,
wow.
he was like, and I just knew it clicked. This is my barber now. And everywhere I've gone from that point on, he's followed us. Now it all makes sense. Because a lot of my clients, since I've been diagnosed and I've got a better understanding of it now, I'm kind of speaking to them about it. And you know, when you see the penny drop and they're going, this makes sense. So for me, I mean, I feel great doing that because there's a few of them that are now like chasing assessments and they're looking at themselves differently and they're starting to manage themselves better. And I'm like, well, this is what I'm here for. It's a pillar of the community. It's not just about the haircut for me.
Mm. Yeah, no, definitely. And does that help your team? Has your team got that level of understanding? Do they chat? Has it changed people around you?
They definitely understand me better. So, I mean, my best friend, Luke, he's my right-hand man. Now, his mom works within that industry somewhere. Okay. Like, she's like a life coach.
Right.
Which is the best way to describe it because I don't fully understand what she does, but she's brilliant.
Sure.
She's written a book called The Listening Space. It's called Times in Hartley, and that helped me a lot. So she gave me a copy that I read that. It's like an active meditation on how to sort of settle your mind when it's going crazy. So Luke's been brought up by her, and I think he's known how to manage me, or support me since we became friends. And that was when I took him on as an apprentice and taught him from there.
Wow.
So there's certain things about running the shop and running a business that he just instinctively knows, right, that's not Ryan's strong point, but I can do that. And he steps in, he supports us that way. And that's how our team runs. There's me, Luke and Joe. And Joe's another one who, I'll be honest, he's probably neurodiverse himself. It's just figuring out whereabouts he sits there. And we just work as a unit well for that reason. We support each other. It's nice to know that I know for a fact that I've got Luke and Joe who are looking after my interests. Joe has me and Luke, Luke has me and Joe, do you know what I mean?
Lovely.
And I just think that's a nicer way of doing things rather than everyone looking after themselves. So instead of Luke looking after him and only him, Luke's actually now got two people looking after him and he's looking after two others. And I don't think that would have happened if I hadn't figured out how I work, how I need support and how I process things. It's all come together really, really nicely. Mm.
Yeah, so it does mean that you kind of understand yourself a bit more and you feel more connected with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In which, like, that makes me feel more connected to the people around us.
And going back, you know, I mean, previously, can you see how that was negatively impacting you when you didn't understand it?
Massively, massively. Emotional dysregulation, not knowing how to connect with people. It often comes out in temper. So because you can't understand why your emotions are heightened, they're very heightened and other people don't understand you. And to be honest, you're kind of told that your way of doing things is wrong throughout your whole life, even down to like school. So I was told I've got to revise long-term for things. Now that doesn't work for me. So I'm constantly told that my process and style doesn't work when it definitely works for me. So cramming things in last minute for me worked because it meant that I would get an adrenaline spike. The panic would set in for an exam. And because of that, I've now got a bit of dopamine, which keeps me engaged. Whereas if I start trying to revise long-term 3 months before an exam, that information's not staying with me at all,
Wow. And so now you're training, or you've got an apprentice who's trained, you've trained.
Yeah.
Do you see the way you train very differently to how others do and how the industry sees itself training?
Absolutely. So I don't really see what I do as teaching. I mean, it comes under education, I understand that, but it's more like coaching. So it's more adaptive.
Okay.
So for me, I think there's amazing education out there, like Menspire, Joshua P course. Yep. There's just so many good educators out there. And I mean, the Joshua P course, I've booked on online but myself, and it's helping us. But I don't use it the way other people have. I haven't done the course. When I see something that I think, right, that's a weak spot for me. I'll go through the lesson plans and go, is there something in here that can help us? And I almost use it like an encyclopedia. Yeah. I just pick
in
and out
and
of it. Yeah.
Grab the chapter you need.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because it's adaptive. Because if I follow his method of cutting, I know that that'll take away my eye. Yeah. I see things the way that I see things. So with Luke, I've kind of done that. I encouraged him to learn his own things elsewhere if he could. So he found a lot of videos online that helped him. And it was a case of saying, like, you go and learn that stuff and come and ask me. When I'm in the shop and I'm cutting, if you've got any questions you ask, I'll advise on stuff that I think you need to learn. And it, like I say, it's more like a sports coach because he needs his own style, his own stamp, and he's really coming to his own. I mean, he's been on the front cover of Modern Barber magazine now in four years, and he's brilliant.
That's fantastic.
Whereas Joe has been very, very different. Joe doesn't really take direction well at all. He needs to learn from his own mistakes. And that was frustrating for me for a while, but then...
It must have been really tough, man.
Pulling your hair out.
I mean, that's tough in general, but from your viewpoint, it must have driven you insane.
Well, especially when the haircuts were coming out and it's like, oh, that's got my name on it. But I tell you what, he's just a brilliant guy. Yeah. So his clients have stuck with him anyway, but he's got this eye for like wavy mid-length hair that I've never seen. Mm. So my way of teaching him was more, I'm not going to tell him what he's doing because he doesn't respond well to it. And I can't teach him what I would do because he doesn't respond well to it. But what I've started doing is trying to pick his brain on, why have you done that?
Yeah, making him think through the whole whole route.
And at first, I think you'd think he's criticising us, but it wasn't that. It was like, Joe, why have you done that? Because it's brilliant. Yeah. But I need to know your process, because if we can figure out your process, we can replicate that. Because his cuts were very good, but that wasn't always consistency. And we finally figured out how to coach him. Me and Luke, because Luke's helped massively.
Yeah.
And he's now getting consistently better, and it's just awesome to see.
So everyone around you must feel like you've just kind of found the magic tree or the happy tree at some point. Your whole outlook of life has got to change. It must have changed in the last 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, to a crazy degree. Yeah. I think anybody who thinks they might be neurodiverse, just look into it, do some research. Don't just use TikTok videos and stuff like that. Do some real research and try and speak to someone else that's got experience on that process, because being diagnosed, the assessment process is stressful. It's actually designed the complete opposite way to what it should be. So it's a lot of remembering appointments. We're not good at that. It's a lot of organization. We're not good at that. Repeating the same assessment over and over again. We're not good at that. So I think having some support really helps.
Yeah. Wow. And so how does this fit in? Well, this is your first, Club 13 is your first sole ownership project. Yeah. Previously, you were with a partnership or in a group of people. What were you doing? What was the last business? Can we talk about that?
Yeah. There was a shop in Hull called House of Barbers, which was struggling to keep its barbers. Myself and Luke had come from another barber shop in Beverly that it just started to fold a little bit. So we left. And Joe came along as our collective apprentice there. Like I say, Luke's helped me teach Joe completely.
Amazing.
It's been brilliant.
Yeah.
So I got in touch with one of the owners and I says, look, I've got a team of barbers to come in, but we have to come as a trio because they're the guys that I work with. These are my team now. Initially didn't want to do that, but changed his mind. He says, look, we'll give it 6 months, see how we get on, because he only wanted one barber. Within about 6 months, him and his partner at the time got in touch and says, look, we want to give you a third in this because we can see that you're doing something with it that we've not been able to, because they're not barbers, they're gym owners. So that worked for about a year. But again, I'm openly admit I'm not the best businessman because I don't look at Club 13 as a moneymaker.
Mm.
I just like going to work and the boys like going to work and we're all making enough money to have our bills paid. And I'm like, all right, well, that's my success. We've all got different metrics for success, haven't we? Now, long term, I would like it to start bringing in profit.
Mm.
But as far as right now goes, I'm just enjoying being there. Whereas the other business, that wasn't the metric. And we just didn't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
They do their things. They're very successful businessmen. More power to them. I went off and
so
did this.
When you kind of went, this isn't working for me, I'm off. Did that spawn Club 13? Was that the next move, or did you waver in between somewhere?
Yeah. So Club 13 was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to rebrand the shop we had, and create more of a social environment. Now that warranted support from the other two partners, which wasn't always there.
Right.
And I mean, myself, I started to get frustrated with that. So yeah, that's, I suppose it did spawn that. Now 13 came because that was on 13 Story Street in Hull.
All right, cool.
And I've always wanted my barber shop not to be a shop, to be a club.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, my clients have just as much a say in the shop as what we do.
It's a cute shop. Like it's a very good job. It looks fantastic.
Yeah,
look, yeah, it really does look great.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it really does. And so now you're holding the reins. Does that feel different?
Aye, it's stressful. It's stressful.
But that's what I mean. With the stress levels that kick in with this and your neurodivergence, does it make it more difficult, or are you just staying the same as I am with a stressful week ahead of you and you get the end of it and need to stop?
I think it depends on who you've got around you. I've just got a brilliant team around us. The lads really do pick up where I'd... So what'll happen with ADHD is sometimes you'll be flying. It's not all bad. It's like some of it's like a superpower sometimes, like creativity just flows, but I don't get to decide when. And that's one of the issues, you know what I mean? It just picks and chooses itself. So I think the lads now, that they realise when I'm starting to drop off and I end up in a bit of a burnout, because when I drop off, they just automatically pick stuff up. And they never expect praise for that or thanks for that. It's just like, we've got you, that's what we do. And the same for me with them. I can tell when they're a little bit sort of out of sorts, and I think, right, what can I do to support that? And then things like LWPR, I picked up with them about a year ago when I was taken on board by Statement Grooming as an ambassador. They've been brilliant. Chelsea, specifically from LWPR, she really supports us as well. And she's another one she's become a friend.
Yeah.
And she's learned when I need a little bit of a nudge, I pick it up a little bit. You know what I mean? You're running behind on this. I need to get this into us. And there's never any judgment there. And I've never made it feel sort of like I've slacked. It's just like sometimes you need support, sometimes you don't.
Sure. Excellent. Yeah, no, it was via Chelsea that we managed to catch up with you and get you down here.
Yeah, yeah. Osh is brilliant.
Yeah, quite a journey so far, but you're sitting in quite a strong, comfortable place. But one of the conversations we did have was regarding where kind of the original backstreet barber, if you like, that original traditional back barber shop, compared to Club 13, and how your approach has changed and what you're doing differently.
Yeah, so I started as a backstreet barber, and like I said before, the shop was amazing, the environment was amazing, and I think that's where that pillar of community stuff started. So historically, you would look at high-end haircuts, there were hairdressers, weren't they? And that didn't feel, I mean, I could be wrong, because I didn't really spend much time in hairdressers, but I don't feel like they have the same sort of closeness and community that my experience of backstreet barbershops used to have, where it was things like, if you need a plumber and you can't find one, your barber will know one. Do you know what I mean? And you can ring him on a Sunday and go, right, I need this sorted, and he'll sort that out. It's a way of connecting the community where we'll turn the barber seats around in our shop, and we'll have full shop conversations, not just barber and client.
Yeah.
Our clients have become friends from being in our shop, and we're in a position now where if I'm not in, I know for a fact that my clients will hop in with Joe or Luke, and vice versa. They're not my clients, cool. the shop clients.
Well
Club
done.
13, they're members of Club 13. So yeah, I think Backstreet Barbering is amazing, and it's definitely got its place. Mm. But high-end barbering, high street barbering, it's something different now. I don't really know how to categorize us because people look at barbers, and if we're looking at sort of price range and quality, people look at barbers and go, well, why would I pay £25 a haircut for you, Ryan, when I could go and pay £10 down the road?
Yep.
So realistically, using that argument, yeah, fair enough, maybe I'm not a barber anymore.
Mm.
Maybe I'm a male hairstylist or a short hair specialist. Mm. I think one of the issues that we've got is that backstreet barbers don't always know where they sit.
Mm.
And realistically, backstreet barbers are looking at quick haircuts, getting them in and out, and that's totally fine because some people just want a quick, cheap haircut.
Yeah, huge business floating around there that want that. Yeah, yeah.
And it can be very lucrative. One of the issues I find though is that it's our job as barbers to manage expectation of clients. Mm. And if you're a backstreet barber, you're working in a backstreet shop, and you're trying to compete with high-end barbering, and your only real arguing point is, well, why would you pay that when you can pay me for this?
Yeah.
There's an issue there. You need to have a look at your surroundings and go, right, are we doing haircuts in 15 minutes? Are we cutting hair with the thought of how is this going to grow out in 3-4 weeks in mind? Or are we thinking we'll get them back in next week? Are we using premium products? Are we cleaning our equipment regularly? Yeah. Is the service important, or is just shorter hair important? If all of those things aren't being considered, how do you know where you sit? And if you don't know where you sit, how can you be honest about where you sit with the client? And so for that reason, you're probably going to get some people going in looking for high-end cuts.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be happy.
Disappointed.
Yeah, they're not going to be happy. And you're also going to start causing issues for the people at the other side of the industry. Because clients, if they've never had a high-end cut yet, they genuinely won't know why they should pay so much.
Yeah.
But realistically, for me, I don't want my clients coming in every week. I'll actively recommend them to leave it 2 weeks minimum.
Yeah.
Three or four is a good haircut, because the skin fade is going to, you're going to lose that in a couple of days.
Yeah.
Realistically, hair grows. You're going to lose the fresh fade feeling, but the shape of the haircut and the stylability of the haircut, if that can't be replicated for a month, I think there's an issue with the cut.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's, you know, the two things that do happen is, you know, I see, you know, you see it wherever you go, that you'll have, you know, a Mackie D's and across the road you'll have a pub doing a gourmet burger.
Yeah.
They're both selling a burger. They're both in a BAP. They've both got a bit of lettuce with them. But your Mackie D's costing you $1.99 and your burger in the pub's costing you a tenner.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but not.
Exactly.
And sometimes you fancy a Mackie D and there's a customer base for a Mackie D and there's also a client base who want the gastro burger.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it's not perfect, but I think that's the better way that I can start seeing that barbershops now have a kind of range, that we're not barbers. That you have, in the same way as you got hairdressing salons that are much more basic, and then you've got, you know, the West End or the city centre temples of hairdressing.
Yeah.
And there's a different price tag with all these things. The problem, I guess, is no one gets upset if you're working in Mackie D's that someone's gone off and fancied a gastro burger across the road.
Yeah.
Whereas we do seem to have kind of disparity in our ranks, if you like, that high-end barbers think they're rubbish, they're what you're paying that for, and there seems to be this internal dispute.
And I think that's my point. So in Hull, there's a couple of shops that I would consider high-end, and I'm happy to admit, like Greasy Fingers around the corner from us, brilliant guys, good haircuts, deserve what they're getting.
Right.
We recommend people go to them if we're full all the time, and in the same in return. There's another one called Space Male Image, which is a little bit of a way outside of Hull. Again, definitely high end.
Yeah.
And not competing with anyone. Because high end tends not to compete. Because we've only got, if I'm looking at between 45 minutes and an hour and 15 per service, I'm really only looking for 8 to 10 clients a day. Yeah. I'm not looking to get 20 clients in a day. So what I'm doing is I'm looking for clients that not only am I the right barber for them, are they the right fit for me? Do I enjoy cutting the hair? Do I enjoy spending that time with them? Like, that's important. I'm building a relationship there. Backstreet barbershops. And again, I came from a backstreet environment and I loved it. And I think they're awesome. I think we need them. But it's a different product, isn't it? It's a totally different product. Yeah. But I find that the backstreet shops trying to compete with the high end or the high street shops, that's what I should say, that's causing an issue. Because the clients don't realize what the difference is here. They're just sat there going, all right, yeah, you're right. There's a problem with that. They're greedy. But our outgoings are significantly higher than a backstreet shop's outgoings. So where I'm charging £25 for a skin fade, I'm not getting that full £25.
By the time you get down your profit line, you're probably not that far apart.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not that far apart. And I suppose that's the difference because, again, we're only doing 8 to 10 a day.
Yeah.
Not 20 a day. So we're probably making the same.
I mean, it's interesting. And this comes up to me again and again about the fact that there's all these barbers opening up. They've got to be money laundering, they've got to be fronts for something, which I never quite understand. And I don't. I think it's happened in hairdressing, it's happened in coffee shops, that there's these other businesses, these other, you know, where there's a little independent coffee shop, all of a sudden you get a chain coffee shop pop up. And then you get another guy who's going to have a little gastro independent thingy. And they tend to kind of huddle together. They're not necessarily competing because they're looking for that clientele.
Well, I mean, for me, the reason I'm happy to recommend people to Space and to Greasy Fingers is because I know for a fact that when they come back, and they do 99% of the time, I don't have to fix something because they haven't had a haircut with next week in mind. They've had a haircut with next month in mind. Yeah. How's this going to look next month? So we've all got our own styles.
Mm.
So my client will come back from one of those shops with a different style.
Yeah,
that's fine by me because it's still high standard, still high quality, and that's what's important.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of grow. You know, as I say, I always think that modern barbering all the phrases feel clumsy and wrong, but yeah, modern barbering kind of started kind of 2010, 2012, 14, 15, somewhere around there, that we started separating the unisex salon as it used to be, that fewer and fewer guys go to the salons. And so the big competition has been taking men out of hairdressing salons.
Yeah.
And I think hairdressing salons have had a much bigger hit. You know, I own two hairdressing salons and I own two barbershops.
Yeah.
And when I opened a barbershop, men disappeared. And I was very happy with that. That was the core part of my business that right. I was shifting over. So other barbers must be taking their gents' cuts from these other salons. Some that are coming from other barbershops, but I still think there's a big bunch that guys who used to get their haircut at Tony and Guy or Head Mike, you know, one of these chains that they'd pay 40 quid for a haircut or whatever, are now changing. And they've found their home in like Club 13 or My Place or all the others that are out there.
Yeah, because some people are there for the service, not the cutters. So, I mean, we're looking at getting a basin put into our shop because I want to add that service because who doesn't like feeling pampered? You know what I mean? Getting your hair washed is nice. It just adds something, a little bit of luxury to what they're used to. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to really get that in a backstreet shop.
No.
And again, it's not even necessarily about skills that are standard because there's a lot of backstreet barbers who
spectacular
are awesome.
Spectacular skill.
Awesome. Yeah, no, yeah, really, really good. Yeah. But they might just want to work at a faster pace. Mm. They might just not want to work on bookings. Yeah. They might like going to work and going, I don't know what I've got coming in today. Mm. And that excites me.
Yeah.
So again, it's absolutely not that I want to compete with them. It's not that I want to put backstreet barbering down. Really, we should probably change the name of that. That's what we know it as, backstreet barbering. But realistically, that it kind of makes it sound like it's a lower standard. It isn't necessarily that. They're just different business models.
Yeah. I think that's it. They're very different business models. I mean, if you go across the States, you can't get very far in the US without finding a Supercuts.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, 90% of the people you speak to wouldn't dream of getting their haircut at a Supercuts, an $8 haircut.
Yeah.
But it's a huge company and they're nationwide and they do great. No frills, no nonsense. Your hair is shorter when you leave.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Doesn't put any of the other salons out of business. There are still high end, there are still mid, there are still... So that range has always been there. It's just, I think, in the last kind of 10 years, a new thing for the high street, these new barbers that are turning up.
So do you think that's why we're having the issue? Because it's new and people don't know how to navigate that
yet? I think there is that kind of level of understanding. You know, like you're saying about, you know, yourself, you know, in the fact that once you understood yourself better,
yeah,
you got happy. You know, it took a lot of stress out. You're like, okay, I'm not going to get worked up about that. I know myself. And I think with our industry, you know, it's just there's this new dynamic that's come on, which is modern barbering or whatever you want to call it. And I think the words make it difficult, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's only words we're getting upset about. You know, I walk into every barbershop I see and I get a lovely reception, whether it's a small little clip joint that's banging them out or a high-end store that's doing steams and facials. I get the same kind of hello. Everyone chats to me really nicely.
Yeah.
So the people are the same. It's just the words.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
the understanding of it. And I think we've just got lost. And the money, that you know, the money's the money, but it's your profit line, you know.
Again, though, like I said before, backstreet barbershops can be very lucrative.
Yeah.
I just think it depends on how you want to make your money, how you want to spend your working day. That's the difference for me.
Yeah.
I get stressed out with a high pace sort of in and out system where I don't have my appointments booked. I know it's a walk-in system. Mm. That doesn't work right for me, which is why I've been on bookings for years now. I just like being calm at work. Yeah. I like being creative at work. And that I need a sense of sort of, but certainly not serenity, because if you come in the shop, it's loud, it's busy all the time. But that's my serenity.
But it's your place, so you call the rules. You know, I've been in plenty of houses where I think, who the fuck decorated this?
Yeah.
I couldn't sit in this room for more than 2 minutes, but it's your place. It's got nothing to do with me. If I like it, then that's why you're going to go. You know, and I think you building your place for you is exactly it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a store up the road here that was just the most beautiful clip joint. Really stunning. 1970s, hadn't touched, looked brilliant. And I popped in several times and chatted to the old boy and said, look, once it's gone, once you want to retire, shout me. I'd love to take this
over.
And I would have barely touched it. It was so immaculate. This guy had loved his shop for all these years. And then sadly, he passed away without me knowing. And his son took it over, flogged it to another barber. Oh. First thing he did, ripped the shit out of it, took all this beautiful stuff and threw it in a skip and tried to turn it into a high-end barbershop. This little clip joint used to have queues down a road. The up-end barbershop does no business. It's yeah. not what people want
yeah.
all the time. You're finding that, you know, you're just finding out, I would never have turned that into a high-end, you know, it would have looked exactly the same. We'd have changed the service, we'd have had changes. But visually, it was too beautiful yeah. to mess with. And there are, I don't know where I'm going with that, but you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was torn with the aesthetic of Club 30, and I've actually got another set of logos that I had made, which are that sort of 1920s classic rich greens and golds and stuff yeah. like that, because I was torn between the two, because I love that aesthetic
the history,
as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. beautiful.
Traditional barbering's amazing, isn't it? Like it's something that we cannot lose that. We need to keep it alive somewhere. That's going to be the Backstreet Shops, yeah. isn't it?
No, it definitely is. And you see it, you flick through Instagram, you'll see people using a strop and sharpening their blades, and you know, there's an awful lot of original, you know, you still see the open scissors as logos everywhere. There's yeah. lots and lots of really beautiful, you know, hereditary stuff yeah. from that. But it'd just be nice if we could just calm it down a little bit.
Do you know what it is?
You know, kind of calm down on the warfare.
Yeah, it's this simple for me. Collaboration over competition. If we can all work together, and I mean the Backstreet Shops and the high-end shops, if we can just look at each other and go, right, what's your target audience?
Yeah.
Well, I want people to come in, be happy with a 15-minute haircut, walk out short, I will see them again next week, champion. Because yeah. next time I get a client that comes in and goes, how much? I can go, I'll tell you what, there's a shop down the road, yeah. and I think they're good guys, I think they'll be perfect for you. And there's no animosity yeah. there. But we just need to get together for that to happen. Yeah. Don't we? That it just needs to be discussed, yeah. I suppose.
Well, I think as you know, where we started from, it is a matter of, you know, knowing yourself, knowing your business, knowing your clientele is the core to happiness.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to change it.
Yeah.
But you can't just bitch about everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we're at, I guess. Mate, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been so gorgeous to meet you. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming up. And I can't wait. I've got to come up and see your store. I haven't been
yeah,
the
you
whole,
should. You need
I haven't
to.
Been the whole since I was 9. And I went to watch QPR play Hull City, which wasn't a successful weekend, if memory serves. But anyway, so I do want to come up and have a little look-see. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Hi there. If you've got a story or know someone with a story or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.